She's going to stay where?
Easy now, partner. She's going to stay down at Miss Flora's place.
A whorehouse?
It wasn't my idea, Buck. It was Miss Flora's. She liked Sally because Sally was always nice and polite to them, ladies that worked the pink house.
Sally Reynolds in a whorehouse?
Miss Flora done closed the doors to the pink house, Buck. Shut her down tight. She's been wanting to pull up stakes for a year. Take her girls and head out. Stratton and them blocked that move, made her mad. Now she's locked the door to the pink house. This is liable to bring things to a head around here, Buck.
Buck began to relax as the humor of the situation struck him. He had been told that the Big Three built the Joy House to keep their Randy Gun Hands happy. If Miss Flora had indeed shut the pink house down, a lot of gun hands were going to be walking around with a short fuse. Leave it to Sally to light the fuse.
What happened to that poor family?
Sally gave him a poke of food and money enough to buy clothes and a wagon and horses. You knew she was rich, didn't you?
What? Sally? Rich?
Her folks is. Her daddy owns a lot of factories and such back east. Her mama has money, too. Stratton and Potter and Richards just might have grabbed hold of the puma's tail this time. I hear Wiley Potter was all upset about what Stratton done today. He sent word to Sally to go on back to her little house and forget what happened. Sally told him, through Miss Flora, that she would forget it only when pigs fly.
Deputy Rogers walked up, a grim look on his face.
Buck West, you go see Mr. Richards over at the office. And you, Sam, is fired. Them words come from Mr. Stratton. He's done found out about you helping them dirt farmers over in the flats. Get your gear and be out of town by sundown. Move, West!
Buck silently stared the big deputy down. Rogers wheeled around and stalked away.
What dirt farmer, Sam?
It's a big country, Buck. These rooms for lots of folks. The Big Three don't object to farmers coming in, but only if they agree to the terms set up by Potter and Stratton and Richards. If they don't, they get burnt out and run off the land. I don't hold none with the likes of that. A young couple with two little kids moved in last year, just after I joined up, started homesteading. Richard sent some of his hard cases in. When the man got his back up, Long shot him dead. Becky, that's the widow woman's name, stayed on the place, working it herself. I kind of helped along from time to time. I was raised on a farm in Minnesota. Guess they heard about my helping out.
You stick around. I'm going to go see Richards. When I'm through, we'll take a ride out to the widow Becky's place, okay?
All right, Buck. I'll be at the livery.
Buck walked to the PSR offices. Richards was waiting for him. He pointed to saddlebags on the counter.
No tests this time, Buck. The corporation is buying more land. Those bags contain gold dust in the contracts. Man named Gilmore is waiting for you in Chalice. Get the paper signed, give him the dust, and get back here.
Yes, sir.
Buck picked up the saddlebags and walked to the stable. Sam was waiting for him, talking with the little boy who worked at the stables. Sam grinned at Buck.
This here is Ben. The stable is his home. His pa was killed in a cave-in a couple years ago. He ain't got no ma. He's a good boy. Keeps his mouth shut. And he don't like none of the Big Three. Stratton took a whip to him last year and marked him up pretty good. Richards kicked him off the boardwalk later on. Busted a rib. He's all right, Buck.
You go to school, Ben?
No, sir. Mr. Roston won't let me. Says I gotta work here all the time.
I remember that name. You seen an old Indian around? Wears a derby hat?
Hunts Long. Yes, sir. When he's in town, he camps down by the creek yonder.
You go tell Hunts Long I said it's time, and he should get the word out. He'll know what you mean.
Yes, sir.
We can't be seen leaving together, Sam. Where do you want to meet?
Creek, just south of town, about 4 miles. I'll meet you there in a couple hours.
Sam, if you're playing a game, working for the other side, you'll never live to see the game finished.
I believe you, Smoke. No games. I'm done with that. See you at the creek.
Buck took his time saddling Drifter. He watched the old flathead, Hunts Long, ride out. He was conscious of little Ben looking at him.
You know Miss Flora, boy?
Yes, sir. Down to the pink house.
After I'm gone, you walk down there and you tell Miss Sally Reynolds I said to keep her head down. She'll know what I mean. You got that?
Yes, sir. Mr. Buck, Sam's a nice feller. He ain't no real gun hand. He got backed into it.
How's that, Ben?
I heard some men talking. A deputy over in Montana Territory pushed Sam hard one day. Sam tried to get out of it, but the deputy drew on him. Sam was faster, killed the man, and had to take the Hoot Owl Trail. Sam's sweet on Miss Becky.
Sam told me he was from Minnesota.
Yes, sir. That's what I heard, too. Sam wants to go back to farming, way I heard it.
A lot of us would like to be doing something other than what we're doing, Ben. But a man gets his trail stretched out in front of him. Sometimes you just got to ride it to trail's end, whether you like it or not.
Well, you be careful, Mr. Buck.
See you, boy.
A mile out of town, Buck cut off the road and reined up, hidden in the timber. He waited for half an hour. No riders passed him. He rode back out of the timber, heading for the creek.
Hey, Sam.
Buck, this here's Becky.
Becky's hair was as red as Sam's, her tanned face pretty and freckled across the nose. She was a slender lady, but Buck could sense a solid, no-nonsense, quiet sort of strength about her. Two red-headed kids stood close by her, a boy and a girl about 4 and 6. They grinned shyly up at Buck. Buck took the lady's hand and was not surprised to find it hard and calloused from years of hard work. After talking with Becky and the kids for a few moments, Buck took Sam aside.
You stay here with her, Sam, until I get back from Chalice. Don't be surprised if you spot some old mountain men while I'm gone. I'm going to swing by their camp and tell them I'm just about ready to strike. I'll tell them about your lady friend here, too. They'll probably ride by to see if they can get her anything. And they'll be by. They don't hold with men who hurt women folk.
Who are your friends, Buck? These mountain men, I mean.
Sam stood utterly open-mouthed as Buck reeled off the names of some of the most famous mountain men of all time.
Those are some of the meanest old codgers that ever forked a bronc.
Yeah, ain't they?
A mile from Becky's cavern, Buck turned straight east toward the new camp of Preacher and his friends. Audie was standing on a stump. He looked as though he were teaching a class full of the meanest, dirtiest heathens to ever walk the face of the earth.
I hate to break this up.
Then don't. Just sit your cayuse and listen and learn. You go ahead, Audie. Tell us some more about that there nut.
Newton! Isaac Newton, you ignorant reprobate! I was merely stating Sir Isaac Newton's theory that to every action there is always an opposed and equal reaction. Or, the mutual actions of two bodies upon each other are always equal and directed to contrary parts.
Then directed to Preacher, because he sure is contrary.
If I had you in a classroom, I'd take a hickory stick to the seat of your pants, young man.
I don't know nothing about Newton, but I like poetry. Can you say some of that?
But of course, Smoke. Dismount and join those gathered round. I came to the place of my youth and cried, "The friends of my youth, where are they?" And Echo answered, "Where are they?"
That don't make no damn sense.
Shit, it don't even rhyme.
It doesn't have to rhyme to be poetry. I have told you heathens that time and again.
Come on. Say something that's purty.
Yeah, like something that's about us.
What a monumental task you have verbally laid before me. Very well. Let me think for a moment.
And I don't reckon it has to rhyme, but it'd be nicer if it did.
And in that town a dog was found. As many dogs there be, both mongrel, puppy, whelp, and hound, and curs of low degree. The dog, to gain some private ends, went mad and bit the man. The man recovered of the bite. The dog it was that died.
Still smiling, Audie stepped off the stump and walked away, leaving the old mountain men to scratch their heads and ponder just what in the hell he'd said.
Is he calling us a bunch of dogs?
I don't think so.
Well, what do you think about it, Nighthawk?
Buck's ride to Chalice was uneventful. He found the man named Gilmore, completed his business, and headed back. When he rode into Barry, past Miss Flora's pink house, he noticed the front door was closed, a hand-lettered sign hanging from a string. "Closed," the sign read. Smiling, Buck rode to the PSR office and handed the receipt to McGregor. The Scotsman had a worried look on his now more than ever dour face.
What's wrong?
New territorial governor was just named. It wasn't Potter. He's fit to be tied.
You knew it wouldn't be all along, didn't you?
I had a rather strong suspicion.
Now what?
I don't know. I haven't got enough evidence to bring any of the Big Three to court and make it stick. The Big Three violate a number of moral laws, but they run their own businesses on the up and up, so far as I've been able to find out. They've committed murder, either themselves or by hiring it out. But since this town and all the people in it belong to the Big Three, no one will talk. But there is a sour, rancid feeling hanging in the air, Buck. Smoke. What is your real name?
Kirby.
I gather those mountain men in the timbers are friends of yours?
Preacher helped raise me. I know most of the others.
Smoke rattled off the list of the old mountain men.
Oh, bastards. Did you know Audie is the holder of several degrees?
Yes. How did you know about that?
Oh, ever since I came out here, 15 years ago, I've maintained a journal of sorts. I should like to take all those pages and turn them into a book someday. A book about mountain men. I talk with many of them, but my God, they lie so much. I can't tell what is truth and what is fiction.
I've discovered that most of what they say is true.
Really now, Smoke? A human being cannot successfully fight a grizzly bear and win.
Negro Matt fought a mountain lion with his bare hands and killed it. Preacher fought a bear up on the North Milk in Canada and killed it. Jedediah Smith fought a grizzly and killed it by himself. Bear chewed off one of his ears, though. Shoefly Miller had a grizzly bear for a pet. Those old boys are still about half horse, half alligator.
My word.
Stick around, Mac. If you live through what's coming up shortly, you can write the final chapter to the lives of the mountain men.
It was going sour, Buck thought, walking from the PSR offices back to his hotel. He could sense it. It was an almost tangible sensation. The gun hands that were constantly in view were behaving in a surly manner, cursing more and drinking more openly. Buck noticed a distinct lack of kids playing on the boardwalks and streets. He noticed a couple of loaded-down wagons parked in front of the general store. Buck stopped in front of a saloon to talk to the scar-faced joiner.
What's going on?
Two school teachers and their families pulling out. Didn't like the way Miss Sally was treated. The boss is some sore, let me tell you. You find something funny about that, West?
Just that a man can't push some women is all.
Oh, is that right? Well, if you think that, there can't be much sand to your bottom, boy.
If you want to get a shovel and start digging for that sand, Joiner, feel free to do so. But I'd suggest you make one stop over first for a little digging.
Oh? And where's that?
Boot Hill.
Buck turned and walked up the street. As he turned, his right side blocked to Joiner's view. Buck slipped the hammer thong off his .44. He could feel Joiner's eyes boring into his back as he walked.
Buck West, turn and fight, you smart-ass son of a bitch!
Buck could hear Joiner's hand as his palm struck the wooden grips of his pistol.
You bastard!
You pushed me, Joiner.
Burton ran out of the apothecary shop, crossed the street, and knelt by the dying Joiner. When he looked up at Buck, his face was flushed with hate.
If you're so damn good with a gun, why didn't you just shoot the gun out of his hand? You didn't have to kill him.
I ain't dead.
You ain't far from it.
Get me a doctor.
The minister would probably do you more good.
Oh, my word.
Help me, Miss Janie. He killed me.
Joiner pointed a trembling finger at Buck. Buck raised his eyes to look squarely at the woman seated in the fancy carriage. Janie met the tall young man's direct stare. The elegantly dressed woman flushed as Buck's eyes stared directly back at her. Her eyes widened as Buck smiled. She watched as Buck turned and walked away.
Oh, my God, it can't be. That's impossible. Kirby's back in Missouri, probably working that damn hardscrabble farm.
But she knew the man who had killed Joiner. Oh, yeah, she knew him.
That's my brother.
Jane suddenly remembered all the good times they'd shared as children back in Missouri. It had been a hard life, but despite that, there had been plenty of love to go around. Never enough money for nice things, but none of them had gone hungry.
No! No! damn if I'm gonna give up everything I've got for the man I haven't seen since he was a snot-nosed kid, trying to farm 40 rocky acres with a mule. The hell with Kirby. I've just found Smoke Jensen.
He's really the outlaw Smoke?
He's Smoke Jensen, but he's no outlaw, Flora.
We can't get out of town, Sally. The little boy Ben says Potter and Stretton gave orders to that nasty Rasta not to rent us wagons of horses. We're stuck.
Sally nodded. As Josh Richards had once explained to her, the Pink House was one of the best constructed buildings in town. The two-story structure was built of logs, with excellent craftsmanship in the construction, and with carefully fitted corners. Instead of a mixture of clay and moss filling the chinks, solid mortar had been used. With a little rearranging of furniture, the house could easily withstand any stray bullets.
All right, ladies, here's what we'll do.
What's happening? I don't understand none of it. It's like everything was just fine one day, and then the next day it's all haywire.
Shut the hell up, Rogers.
Sheriff Dan Reese knew damn well what was happening, but he didn't feel like explaining it to the big dummy standing there before him. He'd seen boom towns go sour before, and he knew that sometimes a fella could skin the clabber off the top and salvage the milk. Not often, but sometimes. But he had a sinking feeling it was too damn late for Barry. Reese looked at his other deputies, Weathers and Peyton.
You men check them shotguns and rifles. Get over to the store and stock up on shells. I don't know why, but something tells me everything that's happening is the fault of that Buck West. God damn him.
Meanwhile, Potter turned from the second floor window of the PSR offices to look at Stratton.
You feel it?
Yes, whatever it is.
I had the territorial governorship in the palm of my hand. And suddenly, for no reason, I lose it. Why? A seemingly intelligent, reasonable young woman, a very capable schoolteacher, suddenly falls for a gun slick. Why? And now I discover that Buck West, or whatever his name is buddy-buddy with Sam. And Sam is sharing the blankets with a squatter. What's happening around here?
Don't forget the mountain men gathering up in the deep timber.
That's right.
Son of a bitch. Those mountain men helped raise Smoke Jensen.
And I've heard recent rumors that Preacher wasn't dead after all.
And all of our troubles started when Buck West arrived in town.
Anybody have any idea whatever happened to old Maurice LeDuc?
The mountain men were camped openly and brazenly about 2 miles outside of Barry. They knew their reputation had preceded them, and they likewise knew that none of the Big Three's gun hands were about to attack the camp. For one thing, they held the vantage point, the crest of a low hill. For another, no 25 cowboys turned gun hands were about to attack a dozen old hard-bitten mountain men. Especially not the most notorious bunch of mountain men to ever prowl the high lonesome. No matter that none of the mountain men would ever see 70 years of age again, that had nothing to do with it. Even at 70, most of them could still outshoot and outfight men half their age.
Damn, Deadlead. Last I heard, old LeDuc came back up to near Bent's Ford and built himself a cabin. Him and a teenage Mexgal. Took up gardening.
Hell's fire! That was back in 58!
Well, what year is this we are in?
Well, about 1875, I reckon.
You don't say. Well, shit, time does get away from a man, don't it?
If that is the case, I was born 71 years ago.
Yeah, and just got uglier every goddamn year.
You should talk. You're so ugly you could pose for totem poles.
I remember the first time I seen one of them things, up in Washington Territory. Like the plum scared me out of my skins.
That had probably been a good thing for all concerned. At least you'd have took a bath then. You ain't been out of them skins in 50 years.
I wish Smoke would get things to smoking down yonder. I'm a craving a mighty action.
He'll start stirring up in a day or two. Then we'll have all the action we can handle. You can bet on it.
I wonder what he's doing down there.
Probably trying to spark that school mom. He's damn sure stuck on her.
Buck now stood on the front porch of the pink house.
What do you mean I can't come in?
Buck, you'd better get out of town. Little Ben just slipped up to the back door and told the Sheriff Reese and his deputies are looking for you. Word just drifted into town that you're Smoke Jensen.
You ladies have plenty of food and water?
Enough for a month-long siege. Now go on, Buck.
Call me Smoke.
Smoke left the porch and slipped around the side of the pink house into the weed-grown alley in the rear. He carefully picked his way toward the rear of the stable. He felt sure the front of the stable would be watched. For the first time since he had arrived in Barry, the town was silent. No wagons rolled up and down the street. No riders moved in and out of town, and there was no foot traffic. Smoke slipped from outhouse to outhouse, both hammer thongs off his .44s. Reese and his deputies apparently believed Smoke would not take to the alleys, but instead a stroll right down the center of the main street, spurs jingling, like some tin-horned kid who fancied himself a gun hand. But Smoke had been properly schooled by a preacher, whose philosophy was thus.
Boy, if you're outnumbered, circle round behind him and ambush the hell out of him. Ain't no such thing as a fair fight, just a winner and a loser.
Smoke didn't want to open the dance just yet. He was in a very bad position, being on foot and armed with only his short guns, and he was still about a block and a half from the stable. His eyes picked up the shape of a small boy, frantically and silently waving his arms. Little Ben. Smoke returned the wave. Ben disappeared into the stable and returned seconds later, leading a saddled and ready-to-ride Drifter. Smoke grinned. Drifter must have taken a liking to Little Ben, for had he not, that stallion would have stomped that kid to death.
Jensen!
Out of the corner of his eye, Smoke could see the young man. He had not yet drawn his pistol. The cowboy was a PSR rider, but Smoke didn't know his name.
Back away, cowboy. Just walk back up the alley and no one will ever have to know. If you draw on me, I'll kill you. Turn around and you'll live.
That $30,000 looks almighty good to me, Jensen. Start me up a spread with that.
You'll never live to work it. Ah! Tell St. Peter this wasn't my idea.
Hold it, Jensen! That damn little stable boy's helping Jensen. I'll take a horsewhip to that little son of a bitch!
Smoke reached Ben and Drifter.
Run to Miss Flores, Ben. The women won't let anything happen to you. Run, boy, run!
Smoke's saddlebags were bulging, so Ben must have transferred a lot of his gear from the packs normally borne by the pack animal. He looked back over his shoulder. Sheriff Reese was now leading a running gang of 10.
Hold up there, Jensen!
Smoke urged Drifter forward, cut into the alley where the dead cowboy lay. Reese lifted a double-barreled coach gun. Drifter leaped ahead and charged through the alley, coming out on the main street. Smoke turned his nose north for a block and then whipped into another alley, coming out behind Reese and his men. With the reins in his teeth, a Colt in each hand, Smoke charged the knot of gun slicks headed by Sheriff Reese. Reese looked at the mean-eyed stallion bearing down on him.
Jesus Christ!
The charging stallion struck one gun hand, knocking the man down, the man falling under Drifter's steel-shod hooves. Reese had jumped out of the way of the huge midnight black horse, losing his shotgun. One of Drifter's hooves struck the sheriff's thigh. Smoke recognized Jerry from the bar he had stopped at on the way to Barry.
Ah, you squatter-loving son of a bitch!
As blood spattered, the foot posse broke up, fear taking over. Men ran in all directions. Smoke urged Drifter on, galloping up the alley and once more entering the main street. He looped the reins loosely around the saddle horn.
Yeah!
Boys, somebody finally grabbed hold of Smoke's tail and give her a jerk. I bet by God they'll wish they hadn't done it.
Oh, he having all the fun.
He's plenty to go around. When he needs us, he'll holler.
How eloquently informative.
Leaning close to Drifter's neck, presenting a low profile, Smoke charged up the main street. He was not going to shoot up the town, for he didn't want to harm any woman or child. he'd made up his mind that he was going to give the shopkeepers and the store owners and their families a chance to pull out. But he was doing that for the sake of the kids only. To hell with the adults. Man or woman, they knew who they worked for. One was as bad as the other. 10 minutes later, Smoke arrived at the camp of the mountain men.
Howdy, son. You've been having yourself a high old time down there, huh?
That's one way of putting it.
You grinning like a shit-eating dog, boy. What you got rattling around in that head of yours?
Smoke looked at Powder Pete.
You got any dynamite with you?
Only time I've been without any was when them darn Lakotas caught me up near the Canadian border and wanted to skin me. Since I was somewhat fond of my hide, I were naturally disinclined to part with it.
What happened?
Well, the chief had a daughter nobody wanted to bed down with. If you'd seen her, you'd know why. Homeliest woman I ever seen. That squaw could make a tornado change directions. The chief agreed to let me live if and I'd share Coyote Run's blankets. Coyote Run's. How come she got that name was when she was born? The chief had a pet coyote. Coyote took one look at her and run off. Never did come back. That's homely, boy. I spent one winter with Coyote Run up in the McDonald Range on a flathead. Well, come spring, I told that chief he might as well get his skinning knife out because I couldn't stand no more Coyote Run. Chief said he didn't know how I'd stood it this long. Shit, I spent the whole winter up there. Told me to take off. I've been carrying dynamite ever since. Promised myself if and I ever got in another bind like that there, I'd blow myself up. What you got in mind, Smoke?
One road leading into and out of Berry.
Powder Pete and the other mountain men grinned. They knew what was rattling around in Smoke's head now.
If you men will, find the best spots to block the road to coach and carriage travel. Set your charges. I'm going to give those who want to leave 24 hours to do so. I want the kids out of that town. I'd prefer the women to leave as well, but from what I've been able to see and hear, most of the women are just as low down as their men.
Simmons' old woman sure as hell is. I know her before. She's common trash.
I still want to give them a chance to leave, and I especially want Sally and the women in the pink house out, along with McGregor and Little Ben. The rest of the townspeople can go to hell.
Deadlid and Graybull picked up their rifles.
Us and Matt and Tennessee will block the horse trails out of town. Rest of y'all, get busy.
Preacher, you take the fur end of town. I'll scout this end. I'll hook up with you in a couple hours and plant the charges.
Done.
I shall make the announcement to the good citizens of Berry. My articulation is superb and my voice carries quite well.
Your voice grates on my nerves when you get to hollering.
Quiet, or I shall get to hollering this instant. Now, considering the mentality of those who inhabit that miserable village, I must keep this as simple as possible. Therefore, the Socratean meutic method of close and logical reasoning must be immediately discarded.
What the hell did you just say? God damn it, you dwarf, can't you speak plain just once in a while?
Rest your gray cells, you hulking oaf. I'm thinking.
Well, think to yourself, you magpie.
Silence, you cretin! What are you pondering, young man?
About what Potter, Stratton, and Richards ordered done to my wife and son.
The preacher told us. That was a terrible, terrible thing. But don't allow revenge to destroy you.
When this is over, Audie, it's over. Not until.
I understand. I have been where you are. I lost my wife, a Bannock woman, and 2 children to white trappers. Many, many years ago.
Did you find the men who did it?
Oh, yes. I found them.
Smoke did not have to ask the outcome.
There will always be men who rise to power on the blood and pain of others, Smoke. Unfortunate, certainly, but a fact. Perhaps a way of life.
The people who run the shops in that town can leave, even though I know they are, in their own way, as bad as Potter, Stratton, and Richards. I'll let them go if they just go.
They won't. For most of them, this is the end of the trail. Behind them lies their past, filled with crime and pettiness. For most of them, all that waits for them is prison or a rope. Theirs is a mean, miserable existence. We, all of us, remember when that town was built. We sat back and watched those dreary dregs of society arrive. We have all watched good people travel through, look around them, and continue on their journey. I, for one, will be glad to see that village razed and returned to the earth.
Audie walked away, about 3.5 feet tall physically, but about 6.5 feet of a man of mind and courage. Smoke sat back on his boot heels and wondered what raised meant. He'd have to remember to ask Sally. She'd know. And with that thought, another problem presented itself to Smoke's mind. He knew he cared a lot for the woman, more than he was willing to admit. But what did he have to offer someone like her? When news of what he planned to do to Barry reached the outside, Smoke Jensen would be the most wanted man in the West. Not necessarily in terms of reward money, for if he had his way, Potter, Stratton, and Richards would be dead and in the ground, but more in terms of reputation. 100, 500, 1,000 gunhawks would be looking for him to make a reputation. Could he head back to the valley where Nicole and baby Arthur were buried? No. Even if Sally was willing to come with him, he couldn't go back there. Too many old memories would be in the way. He would return to the valley for his mares. He wanted to do that. Then push on and get the Appaloosa 7. But after that, well, Smoke didn't know. He'd like to ranch and raise horses and farm. Farming was in his blood, and he had always loved the land. Maybe he'd have a combination horse and cattle ranch and farm. That was very rare in the West, almost unheard of. But why the hell not? But would Sally be content with that? A woman of class and education and independence and wealth? Well, he'd never know until he asked her. But that would have to wait. He'd ask her later. If he lived, that is. Deputy Rogers was the first to report back to Potter and Stratton and Sheriff Reese. Josh Richards was still out in the field. He knew nothing of the true identity of Buck West. Not yet.
North Road's blocked about 3 miles out of town. And I mean blown all to hell. Brought a landslide down 400 or 500 feet long. And the South Road's blocked by a bigger landslide. A bad one. Ain't nothing gonna get through there for a long time. These riflemen stuck up all around town watching the trails. Old mountain men, looks like.
I should have put it all together days ago. I should have known when that damn Jensen came riding in, bold as brass. Should have known that's who it was.
What are we gonna do, Keith?
Wait and find out what Jensen wants. Hell, what
Attention
else can we do?
Attention below. Residents of Berry, Idaho Territory. Gather in the street and curb your tongue.
Do what with a tongue?
It means don't talk.
Oh.
Audie had made himself a megaphone out of carefully peeled bark. He was stationed now on a ridge overlooking the town of Barry.
Armageddon is nigh. Your penurious and evil practices must cease, and they will cease immediately. The women and the children will be allowed to leave. You have 24 hours to vacate and walk out with what meager possessions you can carry on your backs. Follow the flats south to Blue Meadows. Where you go from there is your own concern. 24 hours. After that, the town of Berry will be destroyed.
Reverend Necker had joined the group when Audie had begun his speech.
What did he say he was getting?
What?
He said, Armageddon is nigh. What the hell's a is nigh?
He said Armageddon is nigh. Armageddon, where the final battle will be fought between good and evil. Has anybody got a jug? I need a drink.
Hunts Long and his flatheads will escort the women and children to safety. They'll be waiting on the east side of the creek. You have 24 hours. This will be my last warning to you.
Potter! Stratton! Richards! This is Smoke Jensen. I'm giving you a better chance than you gave my pa, my brother, and my wife and son. 24 hours.
Stratton's heavy jowls quivered with rage and fear. He turned his piggy little eyes to Potter.
Now what?
Just stay calm and keep your senses about you, man. Look at facts. We have 150 men in this town. 30 of them are hard cases drawing fighting pay. Josh is out there with 15 or 20 other gun hands. We're up against a handful of old men and one smart-aleck gun hawk who's too sure of himself. We've both known Huntslong for years. He's a peaceful, trusting Indian, and so is his tribe. Send the women and kids out, and we'll make ready for a siege. The stage is due in 3 days. We'll have someone there to meet it, turn it around, and get the army in here from the fort. Then we'll hang Smoke Jensen and his damned old mountain men, and be done with it once and for all.
The sun had been up for an hour, and the women and children of Barry were moving out, on foot.
I can't help but feel sorry for the kids.
There isn't a child down there under 10 or 11 years of age. They are past their formative years, or very close to it. They are just smaller versions of their parents.
You can't know that for certain.
With very little exception, my young friend. It doesn't hold true always, but water will seek its own level.
Well, we're going to have to keep a sharp lookout for Richard's men, boy. 15, 18 riders he's got is all gun hands. Now, you listen to me, son. Them gold and silver mines that belong to them big three assayed out high. One mine, they got the gold assayed out of more than $100,000 a ton. You know anything about gold, boy?
Nope.
Well, $200 a ton's a workable mine, Smoke. So them boys ain't gonna just sit back and let you and us destroy a fortune for them. We gonna have to be ready for near about anything. I done warned them foreigners at the mines to stand clear of Barry, and they took it to heart.
How about the miners?
Now, some of the miners here now was at the mining camp on the Okampagri, so the betting's high and fast.
Who's the favorite?
Hell, Fireboy, who you think? Wiz.
According to the calendar, it was still the middle of spring in the mining country of East Central Idaho. Someone should have told old Mr. Summer that, though. By noon of the day of the pullout, the temperature had soared and the sun was blisteringly hot. Barry, located in a valley, lay sullen and breezeless, the pocket in which it lay blocking the winds. And the tempers of those trapped in the town were beginning to rival the thermometer. One of Richard's men had discovered the blocked road and hightailed it back to the PSR ranch, informing Josh. Janie had just informed him as to Buck's real name. Josh Richards stood in the lushly appointed drawing room of the mansion and stared out at all the PSR holdings. Slowly, very slowly, a smile began to play at the corners of his mouth.
What do you find so amusing, Josh?
I will soon be the richest man in all of Idaho Territory.
I don't follow you.
Think about it, Janie. You and I are in the best possible position. Your brother's going to take some losses at Barry. Might even get himself killed. Well, we can hope for that, at least. All we have to do is pull the PSR men off the range, leaving only a skeleton crew with the herds, and station them around the house in armed circles. Let Smoke and his mountain men kill off as many as they can in Barry. For sure, Smoke will kill Stratton and Potter. That's what he came here to do. By the time the siege is over at Barry, Smoke's little army will be shot up and weakened. No way they could successfully attack this place. When they start to pull out, that's when I take my men and wipe them out. Simple.
So you're tossing Wiley and Keith to the wolves?
Yes. Do you care?
Hell no! And there's something else, too.
Oh?
You know, the army and the marshals will be here investigating after it's over.
Yeah? Sure. What about it?
Well, you just tell them some crap about Potter and Stratton. Tell them you found out about some illegal dealings they were involved in, that you broke away from them. Tell the investigators you didn't want any part of anything illegal. You can even tell them you and your men joined up with Smoke and the mountain men in the assault on Barry. But that would mean that everybody has to die.
You're a cold-blooded wench, Janie.
Just like you, love.
Oh, I like it. I like it. I've got the best of the gun hands out here. Most of these men have been with me for years. They're loyal to me and to me alone. They'll stand firm. I'll put all the newer men out on the range, looking after the cattle. Put the range cook out there with them, with 10 days to 2 weeks of supplies, and tell the boys to stay put. Love, we are going to rule Idaho Territory.
I always wanted to be a queen.
To put a lid on the growing tempers in Barry, Stratton and Potter ordered free drinks at the town's many saloons and hurdy-gurdy houses. Then one drunk cowboy suggested they kick in the doors to the Pink House and have their way with the women barricaded inside. About 50 men, in various stages of inebriation, marched up the main street and gathered in front of the Pink House. The ladies inside shoved shotguns out through the barricaded windows. The men took one look at a dozen double-barreled express guns pointing at them and sobered right the hell up.
We are closed! You gentlemen have 10 seconds to haul your asses out of here! Aim at their privates, girls!
A dozen shotguns were lowered, the muzzles aimed crotch high. The crowd hauled their asses, pronto. Preacher watched it all through field glasses.
Them gals done read the scriptures to them old boys. I don't think the lady is gonna be bothered no more after this.
One trapped PSR so-called gun hand emptied his pistol at the ridge overlooking the town. Preacher reached for his Spencer and sighted the gun slick in.
Hold still, fella. Bingo! Ha! We having some fun now, Smoke. But it's gonna turn ugly right soon.
Yeah, I know.
You having second thoughts about this boy?
Not really. But if those men down there, with the exceptions of Potter, Richards, and Stratton, wanted to leave, I wouldn't try to stop them.
Yeah, I was hoping you'd say that. Hey, Audie! Bring Smoke that there funny-looking thing you built!
Smoke took the megaphone and moved down the ridge, being careful not to expose himself. He lifted the megaphone to his lips.
You men of Bury! Listen to me! It's Potter and Stratton and Richards I'm after, not you! You don't owe him any loyalty. Any of you who wants to toss down his weapon and walk out can do so.
There was no reply of any kind from the town.
I'm giving you people a chance to save your lives. The men you work for murdered my brother. They shot him in the back and left him to die.
Confederate scum!
The men you work for killed my pa.
Probably needed killing.
The men you work for ordered out the men who raped and tortured and killed my wife and killed my baby son.
I hear tell she was nothing but a whore anyways.
Smoke went back up to Preacher's position.
I can't believe it. I can't understand those types of people.
I can. If you were my size, you would know just how cruel many people can be.
Sam rode up and dismounted, walking to the edge of the ridge. He waited until Smoke and his friends climbed back up.
Giving them folks a way out, Smoke.
I tried.
They ain't worth no pity. I ought to know. I worked for them long enough. I seen them people do things that would chill you to the bone. I ain't never seen a bunch so hard-hearted as them people down there. Lie, steal, cheat, kill. Them words don't mean nothing to them people. Simmons at the general store worked his mama to death, and I mean that, then buried her in an unmarked grave. Cannon at the newspaper's so bad he's barred from the Pink House. Likes to beat women, if you know what I mean. And them ranchers out from town, hell, they just as bad. They run down and hanged a 12-year-old boy when they found him leading off unbranded stock. He was just trying to feed his sick ma. It was pitiful. I seen some sights, but that one made me puke. Don't feel no sorrow for them folks down there, boys. They ain't worth spit.
Come and get us, Gunhawk. We'll give you the same treatment the rest of your family got.
Smoke tossed a homemade megaphone to one side.
I tried.
The owners of the three other ranches located near Barry gathered at the home of Josh Richards. The owners had brought their so-called cowboys, many of whom were outlaws and gunfighters. Richards explained the situation at Barry, tactfully and pointedly leaving out that when his partners were dead, he would own it all. Marshall of the Crooked Snake Spread was the first to speak.
Well, I can see why we can't rush the town. Them mountain men would pick us off before we got close enough to do any real damage.
The other two owners, Lansing of the Triangle and Brown of the Double Bar B, nodded their heads in agreement. Lansing looked at Richards.
You got a plan?
Not much of one, and my plan is rather self-serving, I'm afraid.
Self what?
It helps us, but doesn't do much for those trapped in Barry.
Hell with them. We can always get more shopkeepers to come in.
No one even mentioned Stratton or Potter. The men just looked at each other and smiled. Honor among thieves and all that.
Well, let's hear it.
I don't understand it. Richards has about 20 gun hands out there at the ranch. And by now he's called in Marshall and Lansing and Brown. Together, the four of them could put together 40, 50 men. That many men could put us in a box. Wonder what they're waiting for.
Perhaps this Richards person is hoping to gain from all this.
Sure. If Stratton and Potter get dead, Richards has it all.
The loyalty of those men is overwhelming.
I wanted to burn down the town. and I wanted revenge against those who killed my brother and Pa, and who sent those men after me and my family. But as sorry as those people are down there in Bury, I don't want their blood on my hands.
Preacher seemed to breathe a sigh of relief. He knew the young man well, and he knew Smoke did not want needless killing on his mind.
Well, mayhap you won't have to kill none of them down there.
You chewing around on something, Preacher? Spit her out.
Well, Beartootha, let's us and slip words to Potter and Stratton that Richards is going to lay out of this here fight. Kind of see what happens after that.
Oh, hell, that ain't good enough. Let's juice it up a mite.
Well, sure. Ain't nothing better than a good joke. At our age, that is.
Audie wrote out the first message to be delivered to the citizens of Bury.
Your so-called confidants have elected not to cross the Rubicon. They have now shown their true colors. The moment of truth is nigh. To fight us would be folly. Your true adversaries are your one-time intimates.
Tennessee took a look at the note.
Now, what the hell? I eat Injun corn and sweet corn and flint corn, but I ain't never eat no ruby corn. What the hell does food have to do with this here matter?
Imbecile!
Audie opened his mouth to explain, but then he just closed it, knowing that if he tried to explain about the River Rubicon, it would only confuse matters further. Audie stood and watched as Smoke laboriously printed another message, pausing often to lick the tip of the pencil stub. Smoke tied the note to a stick, slipped down the ridge to within throwing distance, and tossed the message onto the main street. Then Smoke, Sam, and the mountain men sat back and waited for the fun to begin. Deputy Rogers retrieved the stick. Since he couldn't read, he had no idea what was going on. He took the stick to Sheriff Reese. Reese read the message and took off at a run for Stratton and Potter.
It's a trick.
I don't think so. You know perfectly well that by now all the ranchers know the road is blocked. There isn't a day goes by a dozen or more cowboys don't come into town to raise hell. Janie makes her grand appearance in town every day, weather permitting. No, I think we've been tossed to the lions. God damn, Richards.
What are we gonna do?
I don't know. Give me time to think.
If they try to send someone out of town, let them.
Smoke turned to Sam.
And that one person they're going to meet will be you.
I don't follow you.
Your being fired was just a sham. A trick to get you on my side and see who I really was. You make them believe you're still working for Richards. Tell whoever they send out that Richards isn't going to interfere with me. He wants me to destroy the town and everybody in it. Think you can pull that off?
You just watch me.
Sam rode out toward the north, reining up several miles from town. The mountain men built campfires to the south, the west, and the east of Bury. They deliberately left the north dark.
That damn Jensen is so sure of himself, he's not even guarding the north road. We got to be positive, Reese. Send one of your men out to the ranch, or as close to it as he can get. I've been thinking about something else, too. Who gave the orders to fire Sam?
Richard said Mr. Stratton did.
I never gave any such orders. You're sure Richard said it was my idea?
Well, yes, sir. But maybe he just used your name and forgot to tell you about it?
Why would he do that?
Because Sam worked for you, kinda.
Bullshit.
Looks bad, Keith. I'm beginning to think that Richards may have sent for Smoke.
Yeah, that would fit. Reese, you go snoop around town while your man is riding out. Go.
Hold up!
Deputy Rogers reined up and tried to peer through the gloom.
Sam? That you, Sam?
Yeah. Don't let none of them other riders catch you out here. They'll shoot you on sight.
What other riders?
Crooked Snake, Triangle, Double Bar B, and any of Mr. Richards' gunhawks.
Then it's true, Sam?
It's true.
An idea began to form in Sam's head. He thought Smoke would like it.
I'm riding between town and the ranch, carrying messages back and forth.
Well, heck, I ain't got no messages to give you. Sorry.
That's all right. I got one for you to carry to Potter and Richards.
They figured it out, Sam.
Figured out what?
That you was all the time not fired and really working for Richards.
I figured they would.
And Mr. Richards sent for that there Smoke Jensen, didn't he?
I think so.
Yeah. What's your message for them in town?
They're coming in at noon tomorrow.
Well, then, I got a message for you. You tell him we'll be a-waiting.
No, we will not be waiting.
We won't.
Rogers was getting confused.
Damn right we won't. How are we gonna get past Smoke and them mountain men?
God damn it, go holler up the hill. Tell Smoke I wanna talk to him.
What do you want?
It was Richards that ordered your brother killed. Me and Stratton didn't have nothing to do with it.
Smoke knew the man was lying. Knew it because of the dying confession of a TC hand a few years back. Smoke knew Potter had shot his brother. But since Sam had hightailed it back and told him all that he'd done, Smoke had agreed it was a fine idea and that he'd play along.
All right. I never knew who it was, but you was part of it.
I won't deny that, neither of us. But what's done is done. I still have nightmares about it, though, if that makes any difference to you.
That lying sack of buffalo shit. Only nightmares he ever has is someone stealing his goddamn money.
Yeah, I know.
What'd you want to talk to me about?
Ain't no call for us to be fighting each other, Jensen. We know that Josh sent for you, probably paying you good money. But whatever he's paying you, we'll triple it. How about it? You're a hired gun. What difference does it make who pays you?
He's paying me what's on that Dodger. All in gold. You want to triple that? I'll take it in greenbacks or double eagles. Send McGregor up here with the money. Let all the women leave the pink house. Send them up here with Mac.
And you'll do what?
I'll stand aside and let you three fight it out among you. Deal?
Who is Sam working for?
Richards. But I know where he is, so I can get word to him.
All right. It'll take us about an hour to get that much money together. We'll have to open the bank.
I'll be here. In the meantime, you let those women go free.
It's a deal, Jensen.
Sally, you hearing all this?
Yes.
Then get some clothes and blankets together and come up here. You won't be harmed.
We're on our way. And Mr. Potter and Mr. Stratton?
We're right here, Miss Sally.
Then we'll all be armed.
A short while later, Sally and the other girls came scampering up the hill.
Thanks, Sam, for this. He come up with this idea.
Came up with?
Yes, ma'am.
Lord have mercy. Rest you boys look out now. Them two is gonna get sparking and mooning and carrying on like who'd have thunk it.
Shut up, preacher.
He is the most unrespectful young'un I ever helped raise.
Disrespectful?
Hell yes, that too.
About 40 minutes after the women arrived, McGregor called up the hill.
Do you actually expect one aging bookkeeper to behave as a pack animal and carry all this money up this mountain?
Coming down.
Any trouble?
Not a bit. Come on, let's walk.
McGregor tossed his suitcase to Sam and split the sacks of money between Smoke and himself.
I told Stratton and Potter I was no gun hand. I wanted out. They dismissed me without a second thought. Tell you the truth, I was relieved to get out. What in the world is going on, Mr. Jensen?
Letting them destroy each other. I'll clean up what's left.
Very good thinking, young man. But what if one side or the other discovers your ruse?
I'll worry about that if and when it happens.
I think I would not like you for an enemy, young man.
When this is over, Mac, you'll probably never see me again. I intend to drop out of sight, change my name, hopefully get married and settle down.
I wish you luck, Kirby Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. McGregor.
With much good-natured grumbling among the mountain men, the ladies were settled in for the night. Guards were posted on the ridges, although none believed they were really necessary. The lights in the town of Barry blazed long into the night as the men prepared for war. Around midnight, very late for a western town, the lanterns and candles began to go out, and the town was a dark shape in a velvet pocket. The town was stirring before the first silver fingers of dawn began creeping over the mountains, touching the valleys and lighting the new day. On the ridges, the men and women watched the citizens of Barry saddle horses and check out equipment.
Well, mines is shut down tight.
The Frenchman had just completed a night-long tour of the country.
The miners?
They are around, but they keep their heads down and their derrieres out of sight. They know all hell's about to break loose around here.
You see any PSR riders?
Several. They're watching the town. Been there all night. I lost all they know about the deal you made with Potter and Stratton. Seen one haul his ashes back towards the spread, hell-bent for leather.
Going to be a very interesting day.